Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Well, a word we thought was packed away is making a comeback, precipitation. We are in for some interesting weather today, from rain throughout the valley as well as snow in the Sierra and foothills. A welcomed late season storm given a below average year that is once again transitioning to wildfire conditions. So what does all of this mean in the big picture? Will it make any kind of impact on what has been a relatively disappointing winter? And our reservoirs, where do they stand in terms of water use and recreation? For the latest on all of this, we invited KCRA's chief meteorologist Mark Finan back to Insight for a deeper look at the weather in the valley and the Sierra. Mark, good morning.
And good morning, Vicky. How are you today?
I'm doing good. You know, I have to keep looking at the calendar. I'm like, it's April 21st and we have, you know, a pretty robust, you know, late season storm. What conversations are you having in the newsroom, throughout the newsroom and with other meteorologists at KCRA?
Well, the overall theme here is super positive. Everybody's pretty excited about the fact that we have some rain, might have some thunderstorms this afternoon. And it's one of those really interesting days here in Northern California where it's not doing much in the valley right now. Sacramento is dry, but it is snowing to beat the band in the Sierra. We've got chain controls up on 80 and 50. I just checked the Central Sierra Snow Lab, which is up on Interstate 80 up at Cisco Grove, and they picked up 14 inches of snow. And most of that is since midnight last night. So it just has been dumping in the Sierra. Not a good day to travel in the mountains, but, you know, getting more than a foot of snow, maybe another foot on the way. This is all just really, really positive.
Yeah. And of course, weather comes with its own hazards and dangers. But even you're seeing a lot of exclamation points from the Central Sierra Snow Lab on Twitter. And I was looking through the feed and just seeing collectively there's a lot of excitement and people are well receiving, you know, rain and snow, especially, you know, rain usually it dampers your plans. What does that tell us, I guess, in the last few years about the culture and how we view rain and precipitation across the Sierra and Northern California?
Yeah, Northern California is definitely one of the parts of the country where people enjoy rain. Other parts of the country, people say, oh, it's raining again. But yeah, I think everybody here knows and appreciates how much we desperately need rain for so many reasons, for our water needs, as well as to help maybe tamp down a fire season that we all know is coming eventually. So it is one of those things that people do get excited when we start getting some rain. Then especially after the relatively dry months, well, the very dry months we had of January, February, and March. And while this doesn't make up for it, it is very beneficial. And I think that's a good word to use here is the rain and snow that we're seeing right now and the rain and snow we've seen over the last couple of weeks has been very beneficial in a number of ways.
So for people who are just getting up and starting their day, and maybe they missed most of the rain that took place overnight or the early morning hours, what has happened in the last 24 hours?
So Sacramento only saw 0.15 inches of rain. So downtown Sacramento didn't really register that much rain. However, in the eastern suburbs, places like Orangevale are well over half an inch of rain. Auburn's over an inch of rain. On the west slope, places like Georgetown, places like Grass Valley are up an inch and a half of rain. And many of those areas will get more. And as I mentioned, the more than foot of snow we've already seen on Donner Summit. And so as we go through the day, what we'll be looking for in Sacramento is the possibility of thunderstorms developing. And I think that's going to be a concern, actually the biggest concern for places like Sacramento for the next, let's say, 8 hours or so, will it be the possibility of getting some localized heavy downpours, maybe some small hail, and obviously the lightning that could go with that too. So that's what we're looking at today. But it's also, as I mentioned earlier, one of those days that for people that do need to travel over the summit, they shouldn't be fooled by the relatively dry conditions we're seeing in the valley. It is going to snow throughout much of the day in the High Sierra.
When it comes to the valley, I mean, you're talking about some relatively extreme weather from thunderstorms and hail. What is the perfect recipe for this kind of weather?
Just exactly what we're getting today. So we had overnight rain, and now we have colder air coming in, and now the sun's breaking out. The sun's breaking out in parts of the valley. If you have overnight or early morning rain, and then you get sun by 9, 10, 11 o'clock, you'll just watch the clouds pop up this afternoon. And by this afternoon, I mean early this afternoon. We could start to see thunderstorms as early as the noon hour. But I would think between, let's say, noon and 5 o'clock, anywhere in the valley, from Modesto to Marysville, we have the possibility of getting some of those thunderstorms. And it's the right time of year. We do see these, especially in March, April, and May, when you get a day like this with colder air coming into Northern California. it is the right recipe to have the possibility of thunderstorms, maybe even some funnel clouds. We've seen tornadoes in these kind of conditions. Today doesn't look like a great tornado day, but it certainly looks like a good thunderstorm day for the valley.
Moving up to the higher elevations, how much are you forecasting or projecting in terms of snowfall?
So we had that 14 inches overnight. That's going to taper somewhat in the next couple of hours. And then there'll be another surge that'll come through late tonight and early tomorrow morning before sunrise. And that will give us maybe as much as another foot. So the elevations above 7,000 feet are likely to push over 2 feet of snow. And it's interesting, at this time of year, the snow tends to be wetter and heavier. So for skiers, you might want powder. This isn't powder. This is Sierra cement. But the great thing about it is the water content in it. And in the terms of the snow, it's up there and it'll gradually melt over the next 6 weeks or so. And all of that feeding into our rivers. This is a really welcome sight for Northern California, knowing what it's going to do for our rivers and eventually our reservoirs.
Yeah, especially given, I mean, didn't we have some record highs recently in the past few weeks, or at least flirting in like with up near 80 or in 80 degrees, but flirting with 90 degrees? I guess historically, where does this sit with you, this storm that's moving through at the end of April?
It may seem atypical because of the dry weather we had in January, February, and March, but this is very typical for the month of April. And what's interesting is that even though we've had a few storms lately come through Northern California, Sacramento is still going to end the month of April with below average precipitation, unless we get a big thunderstorm this afternoon that sits over the rain gauge. But so far, downtown Sacramento, even though we've had, I think this is our fourth or fifth day with rain this month, it's going to be below average. It's been kind of an anomaly because a lot of the systems that have come through haven't dropped a lot of rain in downtown Sacramento, but they have brought much more rain to the east side and the foothills and the Sierra. So in the big picture, if we had had a normal January, February, March, and it just kind of continued with this kind of weather, I don't think people would be thinking that this is too out of the ordinary. But because it was so dry, and because in the first week of April, we're up around 90 degrees, I think this may seem a little bit unusual just because of our recent memory.
Yeah, got it. Well, talking about that bigger picture and the wider view of our water year, can you just define what a water year is?
Yeah, the water year now goes from October 1st to September 30th. It used to go July 1st to June 30th. But we look at the rain season, if you will. So let's say starting October 1st and going into the summer months, that's our rain season. You know, many other parts of the country, they can measure their rain just in the calendar year. But ours is so seasonal. We have a very well-defined dry season and a very well-defined wet season that just happens to straddle the calendar, if you will. So it takes up parts of both years. So that's why we have a rain season that straddles the year. And, you know, Vicki, it's interesting. If you look at this year in downtown Sacramento, we have so far have had over 16 inches of rain. The average for an entire season is a little over 19, between 19 and 20 inches. So we aren't that far below average. We had a great October. We had a great December. Yeah, the last 3 months were really dry. And now we're adding some to our totals. But if you look at the overall rain season, it is going to be wetter than the previous two were. So our recent memory of what we had in those 3 months of January, February, and March will make it seem like it was a really bad year. But actually, it wasn't that bad. If we hadn't had a couple of years of drought, this year wouldn't be all that bad. But this isn't what we've had so far this year, and what we're getting today isn't going to be enough to make up for those dry seasons. However, it is going to be beneficial for our reservoirs, especially Folsom Lake. Folsom Lake right now is at 436 feet above sea level. That's the highest it's been since July of 2020, and it's still rising. So earlier, I heard you mention recreation. For those that like to use Folsom Lake, we couldn't use Folsom Lake last year for power boats because
you could walk out there, though. You could walk out.
You could, but for this year, it's going to probably get up to 450 feet. The top's 465, but I think we're going to have a really good boating season on Folsom Lake with probably just as good as it was 2 years ago. So there certainly is a benefit here. But then if you look at the bigger reservoirs for water storage, Shasta, Oroville, they're not in great shape, but we should have enough water to get through this year. And now we'll be in a position hoping we get a big year next year.
You know, given that this year didn't go, you know, as expected historically, should we just come to expect that from one year to the next?
You know, if you look back at the last 100 years or so, we go through dry spells, we go through wet spells. We have, you know, years where we get, I mentioned that the average is right around 19 inches. We go many years where we have 12, 14, 10, and then the next couple of years we'll have 25, 28. And I think that that's always what we've been doing. When we say the average is 19 inches of rain, we never have an average year. So it's, you know, the average is just the average, and the average is made up of the extremes. And we, you know, so next year, we're just hoping we break out of this and have a gangbuster year and get 25 or 26 inches of rain. But yeah, if you look back at the 100 plus years of records we have, we've kind of gone through this pattern a lot of times. And it's funny to see these dry, 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 super wet. And we did that back in the 20s when we came out of one of these. We did one of these back in 1911 to 1913, had a really dry season, and then all of a sudden came out of it. So I think that's kind of what we're going to be looking for is a big year next year, maybe 25, 26 inches of rain.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with KCRA Chief Meteorologist Mark Finan about the latest system that's moving through Northern California and the Sierra. A big word that gets brought up a lot now in California is drought and drought-like conditions of varying degrees. What does drought actually mean?
A drought is an extended period of dry weather, and certainly we have had that, despite the rain that we're getting now and the rain we've had recently. If you look at our rain season, obviously that is below average. And for California, it also has to do with water supply. So when you look at Shasta and Oroville, our water supply is well below average. If we had an average rain year with full reservoirs, there may be some areas of California that are considered dry, but I would not consider us to be in a drought because we have adequate water supplies. This year, we have below average water supply, and because of those big reservoirs being so low. And so that means that a lot of farmers will not get the water that they want and that they need. So, well, I think for most residential customers, I think that everything will be okay with water on a less than average basis. We're conscious of the water we use, but the big impact for our water supply right now is for the agricultural concerns, not getting the water that they need because of the lack of rain we've had.
We're now, you know, quickly approaching a wildfire season, which is they call a wildfire year now. I mean, how will this system impact potentially the fuels on the ground in terms of wildfire? Would it just delay the inevitable, or is there also comes risks with drying out vegetation and weeds and grasses and trees with windy conditions and wildfire prone conditions, frankly?
Well, right, and there's no. There's no such thing as a year when we won't have wildfires. If you look back at all the years, we've always had fires, but obviously we've had some of the bigger ones lately. But what this rain has done, not only the rain we had today, but the rain we've had the last few weeks, is if you look at fuel moisture, so that's the amount of water that's in the grasses, the water that's in the brush, water that's in the trees, that has gone up dramatically. And so that's what you look for, is to have the fuel have more moisture in it, and therefore it's less fire prone. We were a little bit worried about that because that fuel moisture had gone down so much with the dry weather we had in January, February, and March. And then in early April, we had the warm weather, and that was really starting to dry out the vegetation. Now, of course, we are going to eventually dry this out too. But I've looked at some of the longer range models, which can be kind of iffy. But the good thing that I've seen here for the next, let's say, two and a half weeks is that I see more periods of cooler weather, or maybe average weather, which is mid 70s for this time of year. Well, the thing I do not see is a pattern where we're going to see temperatures in the 90s or a lot of north wind and that sort of thing that dries out the vegetation. So what this does is it helps to delay the fire season. There's no getting away from the fire season, but this helps to delay it. And as long as we continue with cooler than average weather, maybe even the occasional rain as we get into the month of May, that'll again help to delay the fire season a little bit. And keep in mind, fire season usually starts with grass fires in the valley. And the longer we can put those off, longer we can put off the big fire season. And if you look at the fire season, the best thing that you want is a cool, wet spring and an early start to the fall. You want to get some rain, maybe in late September or something like that. So if you have rain into May and you have rain in September, that's the best recipe for a fire season to help shorten it on both ends.
I go back to former Cal Fire Chief Tom Porter when he said during a press conference at the Caldor fire that every acre in California can burn. I mean, are there specific parts of California that are in more danger of wildfires or doesn't even matter at this point in terms of dryness?
I don't think it really matters in terms of dryness. I think, you know, the vegetation right now, as of today, has adequate moisture. But as we head through June, July, August, September, all of that will dry out. And you're trying to figure out where we could have a big fire it's impossible. There are communities that I fear that are at risk in the foothills. I worry about a lot of the communities up and down the foothills between 2,000 and 4,000 feet. We saw that with Caldor last year, and I think that's where you have the most vulnerable population in areas with dense vegetation. And those are the areas that I worry about. And I'm just not sure there's much you can do about it other than your own taking care of the property that you have. But there is so much vegetation in the foothills that can burn, and there are a lot of people that live in those areas. That's my biggest concern.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us and breaking all of that down.
Vicki, thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You as well. Mark Finan is a KCRA chief meteorologist, and we also have a programming note to pass along. On Monday, we have a special that's airing in place of Insight. It is called Climate Costs, and it's from the California Newsroom. It's going to share stories of the people and the communities being asked to bear the costs of climate change here in California. That is going to air Monday in place of Insight at 9 a.m. Up next, we'll learn about the Yurok tribe restoring a sacred tradition, releasing endangered California condors for the first time in a century. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. The California condor, one of the largest and rarest flying birds on the planet, once thrived on the West Coast, with 9-foot wingspans allowing them to soar up to 15,000 feet in the air. They could be seen from British Columbia to as far south as Baja California. But beginning in the 19th century, their numbers steadily declined and were driven nearly to extinction, before scientists captured the few remaining condors and saved the species through a captive breeding program. Today, there are about 330 condors in the wild and another 200 in captivity. 4 of those are currently in Humboldt County. And thanks to the efforts by the Yurok tribe, will soon take to the skies over their ancestral lands for the first time in over 100 years. The return of these birds is not only an ecological milestone, but also the return of a critical cultural and spiritual centerpiece for the Yurok people. Joining us now is Tiana Williams-Clausen, director of the Yurok tribe's wildlife department. Tiana, welcome to Insight. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me today.
When did you first become fascinated with condors?
So my story is a little bit haphazard, I guess you might say. But I'm a Yurok tribal member. I grew up on the Yurok reservation and surrounding lands. And even as a young child, I knew that I wanted to give my life to serving the Yurok community. And there was a lot of ways that I could do that. For a long time, I thought I was going to be a doctor, actually went to school, got my degree at Harvard in biochemical sciences to be a doctor. But I got to the end of my senior year and I'm like, oh no, I don't want to be a doctor. But there was an opportunity that the tribe offers. They invest in their tribal youth by providing internships. And so after I graduated, I was offered an internship with our self-governance department, which is something like the State Department for Tribes. We work on co-management across the whole of Yurok ancestral territory to meet Yurok tribal needs. Now, that said, the self-governance department also coordinated what we called the Tribal Park Task Force, which was a panel of our elders specifically designated to prioritize natural and cultural resource restoration needs, because there was a lot, because there was a lot of, unfortunately, destruction to our ancestral lands post-American contact, post-California Gold Rush. But they chose California condor Preganish as the single most important land-based species to bring back to Yurok ancestral territory. The last bird was seen around the turn of the 20th century, into the 20th century, because of our deep cultural ties to the birds, as well as the ecological function that was no longer being filled by their absence. And so I went from a position with the self-governance department to actually the first employee of our newly crafted wildlife departments, which had California condor as its flagship species. And so that was in 2008 when the wildlife department got started, and we've been working towards California condor recovery ever since then.
Yeah. I mean, and California condors are just one example of a species that was driven nearly to extinction because of humans. But if you can explain to us, like, specifically when it comes to California condors and Northern California, and they haven't been seen in the skies for over 100 years, what led to the disappearance from that region?
Unfortunately, as is often the story, it was largely human-caused problems for them. They had been relatively abundant in our region. As you'd mentioned, they went all the way up to British Columbia at one time. But with the huge influx of more people, there's just a lot more human impact. So, for example, there was direct take of condors, which is very hard on the species. They are a long-lived, they can live as much as 60 to 70 years, but slow-producing species. So if you have high mortality but low reproduction, that's, you know, what causes extinction. So there's direct harvest or killing of them for science or out of fear of them. There's people laying out poisoned carcasses for other species that they had concerns over, like wolves or bears, and the condors would eat them and die. As you referenced, condor story is not a unique one. There was a lot of over-harvest of the foods that they relied on. So the large game, like elk and deer and California sea lion and whales, so they didn't have the food resources to continue to persist. And there is the introduction of new and toxic chemicals. Two of them that remain an issue today are lead contamination, which has been implicated through the use of lead ammunition. It's a soft material and fragments heavily upon impact, which probably isn't too much of a problem for most adult humans, but for condors and other scavengers like eagles, you know, a piece as small as the head of a pin can kill one of these animals. And so it will break into hundreds of pieces, get into a gut pile. A hunter will leave the gut pile behind, which is normally good food for a scavenger, but not when contaminated with lead. And that's actually caused something like 50% of known mortality for condors in the wild, even today, in most recent years. So that was introduced. The other chemical is DDT, which we know causes eggshell thinnings and remains a problem for condors in some places where they're using a lot of coastal resources. So these things can be addressed. For example, that we stopped using DDT in our environment, and it's only going to be a downward trend from there. And there's been a lot of support from the hunting community to transition to non-lead ammunition, which is non-toxic for these birds. But they definitely had their impact and unfortunately continue to have their impact in certain areas.
Yeah, especially since the Yurok's relationship with these birds goes back to the beginning of time. Can you tell us more about the history of this relationship and the condor's cultural and spiritual significance to Yurok people?
Definitely. So I think to start, as you say, you got to start with the beginning of time. It's always hard for me to be brief because you have to start with the beginning of time for most stories. But even before humans were really what we consider to be the people of the world, the spirits or the animals were the people of the world. And it was from them that we learned how to manage the world and keep it in balance. And so one of the ways that we do this is through our world renewal ceremonies. We actually consider ourselves to be world renewal people. That's our foundational reason for existing, to keep the world in balance and healthy. But back in the beginning of time, it was species like the condor who helped develop these ceremonies that we continue to see, that we continue to engage in today, providing us prayers, providing us parts of our regalia. Condor, particularly, we believe, ecologically speaking, he actually flies higher than any other species in the entire world, or in the entire North America, excuse me. And so we believe that he carries our prayers over the world when we're asking for the world to be in balance. So he is very foundational to our reason for being. So not having him here as a part of our ecological community has been very difficult, because it's hard to maintain a relationship with someone who's been gone for well over 100 years. And that's largely what drove us to start this initiative.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And this initiative, as you mentioned, began over a decade ago. You've personally been working on this since you were interning as an undergrad. And the expected release of these California condors has made state and even national headlines. It must be such a special moment. What does this moment mean for you?
It is incredible. I mean, there's just been so much. I mean, there's obviously, my heart is too full to even possibly describe. The first time, because we actually have the birds up in Humboldt County, as you mentioned. So the first day that they were there, there was lots of grinning. There was lots of tears. I didn't get very excited. I'm going like this, like wiggling my hands and stuff. But there's just so much love for them in the community as well, which has just completely buoyed us up and kept us going for the last 14 years. And of course, condors themselves are so iconic when it comes in terms comes to terms of endangered species conservation and saving them, really. So this has just been a huge deal for so many people. And one of the things that I love about condors, not only themselves, but is just how much love people have for them and how they bring people from so many diverse walks of life together in support of such incredible conservation movements.
Yeah, they're majestic. And I mean, when our producer, Nick, brought up this story and reached out to you, I mean, we all got super excited about it. So it definitely has ripple effects beyond Northern California and Humboldt County. In addition to the sacred and spiritual role that condors play, you know, they're also a piece of the ecosystem. Can you tell us more about the role that California condors have in the ecosystem and why it's so crucial and important?
So California condor are an obligate scavenger, as we say. They only eat dead carcasses on the landscape versus something like an eagle, which can both, you know, kill food itself and scavenge for food. Now, that said, we do have our local scavengers. We do currently have our turkey vultures and our common ravens, but they're, compared to condors, relatively small. The ecological niche that condor fills is being able to really start the decomposition process for the very large animals that they like to feed on. So again, that's the elk and the deer, California sea lions and whales that otherwise have a hard time to start getting broken down in our system. So, you know, me, I live on the coast. I do a lot of beach walking. It's very common that you'll walk along the beach and you'll see these large, really honestly disgusting bloated California sea lion carcasses, not to be too indelicate there. But condors go in and they break through that tough skin, that thick blubber that smaller animals can't, not only feeding themselves, but also decomposing the animal and making the food more bioavailable to other scavengers to eat.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Tiana Williams-Clausen, the director of the Yurok Tribe's Wildlife Department, sharing efforts to return the California condor to tribal lands after a 100-year absence. So let's get to the big question. Can you tell us when you think these condors will be released?
I can tell you very soon. It's a little bit of a biological complexity. These are young birds. They're 2 and 3 years old. We have 4 birds who will be releasing, 1 female and 3 males. They are full size. They're full grown, but they're still considered juveniles, and they came from the captive rearing facility. So they've actually never been out in the wild. So we're looking for a particular set of environmental factors to release them into. So one is the appropriate sort of weather. So some decent wind, but not a ton of wind, because it's going to be the first time they're flying out on their own. Some good sun. We'll also be looking for a time when our other local scavengers are nearby the release facility where they're currently being held so that we can release them out into a flock of turkey vultures or ravens. They're very social birds with each other, but also with the rest of the Avian Scavenger Guild. So we're looking for a time that kind of meets a multiplicity of environmental needs, but also making sure that the birds seem ready to go out themselves, that they're happy and healthy and ready to jump out. So hopefully within the next 2 to 3 weeks, though I don't have a specific day that it's going to happen yet.
Well, that's like 14 years in the making. So 2 weeks is like a snap of the fingers, right? Or a blink relatively. am I correct? Do these four birds, do they currently share a pen with a mentor bird?
They do. We have a mentor bird, 746. He actually came from the Boise World Center of Birds of Prey, they're managed by the Peregrine Fund, who have been an awesome partner. All of the California Condor Recovery managers and treatment facilities and breeding facilities have been amazing partners. But so we bring in a mentor bird who is an adult bird because he can help kind of finish off the condors, I guess you might say, and teach them really those last touches of appropriate condor social behavior, which is really beneficial to them when they're out in the wild, because they are very communal, they are very social, and they rely on each other to do well. So he's kind of finishing them off, teaching them the last things that they need to know. He won't be released, unfortunately. He's staying with us probably for the first and probably the second cohort of birds that we'll receive as well, after which he'll return to the Boise World Center of Birds of Prey to help contribute to the breeding population. But for now, he's just a great asset, and we're so grateful to have him.
You know, once the birds are released, obviously your work isn't complete, and there are still challenges that these four condors will face. What is the next phase of your research, and what do you hope to learn?
Well, we just hope to learn what the birds teach us, honestly. It's been a very long time since they've been on the landscape. And while we do have traditional knowledge about how they use that landscape, this is a particularly unique situation in that it's the first new release area in 19 years, I think, almost 20 years. And all of our birds are going to have just the top technology for tracking them in the field. So this will be the first release where we'll really be able to extensively monitor how a new reintroduction like this kind of plays out, like almost on an hourly sort of basis, because our satellite tags give us an hourly ping for everything that the birds do. So I'll be watching to see how they navigate a new state, a new place, not having another condor flock to integrate into, which thankfully through their hard work at other release sites, condors who are released do have an old flock to integrate into. So they're basically the pioneers here of Yurok ancestral territory. And I'm just going to be really interested to see how they adapt and expand into our landscape.
Yeah, given that this is so groundbreaking and going back to the beginning of time, how have your elders and ancestors helped shape this journey?
This has been entirely their doing. Obviously the Yurok tribe, all tribes went through a very hard time, and us no less. We were forced off of our lands. Our children were taken to the boarding schools where it was illegal to speak your language or practice your culture or wear your traditional clothing or anything. Our ceremonies were illegal until the 1970s. And so it's really incredible that we're still here to tell our story. But I'm just always amazed by the powerful hearts that maintained these cultural connections despite the absence of condor, despite all the pressures on us as a human population. And so I really feel incredibly blessed by our elders who kept that knowledge, who kept that relationship, who maintained it until the world evolved to a place where people like me could pick it up and make changes like this. So this never would have happened without them. We've definitely had our elders out to meet the birds. I can't put into words how amazing that felt, how much gratitude they had for meeting the birds. I always put the honor to them, but it's the Yurok way to be grateful. And so I just really appreciate their gratitude for the work that we're doing. And I just feel like we're in a really amazing place, and there's just only awesome things to come from here.
Yeah. You and these condors are healing generational harm, really.
We are. I think restoration of Preganish, which is the Yurok word, really means restoration of the Yurok people and our entire system.
Tiana, thank you so much. I hope you have a great ceremony and celebrate, you know, that day, you know, 2 weeks from now when they're released.
We'll definitely be doing a live feed. So if anybody's interested, you can follow us on the Yurok Condor Restoration page on Facebook, or we have at the yuroktribe.org/wildlife is our website. And we'll be keeping the news coming as things develop.
Thank you for making the time this morning.
Thank you.
Tiana Williams-Clausen is the director of the Yurok Tribe's Wildlife Department, sharing efforts to return the California condor to tribal lands after a 100-year absence. Still ahead, we're going to soak in tiny desk favorites from across Northern California. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Every Thursday this month, we're basking in All Melody's Tiny Desk. The window for NPR's Tiny Desk contest has closed, but that means we have dozens, hundreds to sort through from across Northern California. And that takes some help. Last week, CAP Radio Modern Music Director and host of Hey Listen, Nick Bruner, and I, we shared our favorite picks. And today, we're pleased to welcome Tara Lopez with her selection. Tara is a musician and lead singer for Rituals of Mine, which hails from Sacramento, and joins us with her Northern California Tiny Desk favorites. Good morning, Tara.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, you are a familiar voice that predates me and even the pandemic, not only with Rituals of Mine, but also as a guest of Insight. And to get caught up, I was listening to past interviews before the pandemic, before I was host. And I just so enjoyed listening back to those conversations and also listening to your music, which started back in 2008 as Sister Crayons. How do you describe this journey as an artist? Because it's a trajectory that continues and is so well deserved.
Thank you so much. I mean, I'm just grateful, honestly, for continuing to or being able to continue to evolve as an artist. And, you know, I'm very grateful for the city of Sacramento for always supporting, whether I lived in Sacramento or across the country and whatnot. The city has always been supportive of any and all endeavors. And so I'm just very honored. And it's, you know, to be an artist right now, it means everything to me.
Yeah. We're going to get into Tiny Desk favorites in just a moment. But when Nick Bruner approached you to help out, what does Tiny Desk mean to you as an artist?
It's discovery. I think I have discovered so many of my favorite artists through Tiny Desk. The energy of Tiny Desk is infectious. And, you know, it's a conversational piece. I feel like I have had so many great conversations about new artists or subjects through Tiny Desk. So to me, it's just a tool of discovery.
Yeah. I really enjoyed going through all of the selections and entrants too. It was my first year and it was such a treat. Well, let's get to your first selection. It's Jakari Smith, Far Away. What stood out to you about this performance?
Raw talent. The raw talent in this was just immediate. Also, the energy was really infectious. There's such good vibes throughout the entire thing. The song is catchy. The chorus is really great. But also the lyrical content is very relevant, especially right now. And it was infectious. I just fell under Jakari's spell.
Let's take a quick listen.
Take me somewhere, far away from here. Take me somewhere, take me, listen.
Under pressure, I'm a diamond in the rough. Mama told me life gonna be tough, and all this stuff on my mind split cheer me up. And I've been dreaming about it all since I was a pup. Them days as a youth are better than I ever knew. We fight each other, but we run from the boys in blue. See yourself and your brother trying to make it through. Have a little love for me, a little love for you. Follow the darkness inside me till I saw the light. My angels working overtime, working day and night. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. I know it may take some time, stay on your grind. I'm asking why is death always on my mind?
I love this video. They're just harmonizing on a rooftop on a beautiful Sacramento southern summer day. It's just such a chill song.
It is, and it makes me, you know, I want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw the video, I was like, hold on, who are these people? I want to get to know them. It was just, again, just such great energy.
Let's get to your next one. This is Aviva LaFay on the news again, and she hails from Murphy's in Calaveras County.
This is what Tiny Desk is all about, right? This intimate, just really unassuming video. And then here she is with this incredibly powerful song talking about everything that's relevant and happening right now in the world with Ukraine, with Palestine. I was drawn into this. It's such a beautiful, simple song that really hits home.
Bloodshed on the news again. I turned away, ever the fair weather friend. They said 139 dead, 27 children. As I lay in bed,
yeah, it's so reflective and somber. And she recorded this at Calaveras County's community radio station. And I think we can all relate to that, kind of the difficulty of staying engaged with the atrocities of the world and in our hometowns.
Right. I mean, it absolutely just made me reflect on exactly like how we're all in this situation where how can we stay in tune with what's going on in the world while also just living our daily lives. And I felt like she just really, you know, got to the root of that.
So your next one is Gillian Grogan, Daffodil, and Gillian's from Healdsburg in Sonoma County.
This voice is undeniable. I feel like it's just a classic. Her tone is incredible. The song is really beautiful. The video is really beautiful. I mean, she's singing in this meadow. It's just very peaceful, but just such a talent. I was blown away.
Rummage through the corpse of a love that was lost or a love that was wrong. Shuffling along in a sad little song, all the clouds dragging on. Once in a while it'd be nice just to know in my bones that the clouds will dissolve.
Yeah, the video is, she's in a field, you could hear the wind, the water, it's obviously folk, it's so vibrant.
It's beautiful, and again, this is, to me, this is like the essence of Tiny Desk, discovering these raw talents. Her voice is just undeniable. I mean, that's kind of how, all that I can say about her is she's a classic, and the tone is just, it's perfect.
Yeah. So we all were supposed to select three, but you did extra credit. You got a number four, and this is from Oakland, Kariga Bailey, No Weapon. What did you love about this?
The vibe is so strong on this. It is so beautiful. I mean, Kariga's voice is just so healing immediately. And the lyrics, what he's touching on, is so important, especially in this genre of hip hop, talking about mental health, therapy, grief, healing, trauma. I mean, it's incredible. And also, like, his baby, he's rapping while he's holding his baby and he doesn't miss a note. I love Kariga Bailey's voice. It was just, again, the energy came through the screen.
Yo, if it wasn't for that bloodshed on Calvary, word is born, we would have been caught in the Calvary. No reference for this pain, there ain't no colorful analogies. It's life and death and it's governed by principality. And naturally, we casualties at wars we never started. Still good over evil, my tribe be lion-hearted. Change your song to drive out darkness, put my faith in God regardless. A man can't be a king if he afraid to take his losses. And that crown is heavy and the cup is bitter, but we won't practice hate cause we believe in love, my brother. But when somebody take your brother, make you reconsider. Retaliation had me ready to go purple, but that's for certain. What you expect me to do when we see his daughter hurting? You know how many nights I dry my eyes behind them curtains. I'm fighting demons, but sometimes I feel like it's not working. I lift my eyes up to the hills while I'm still down here searching.
And his daughter's Kamali, and I love that he's holding his baby and you can hear her in the background. It's just so touching and warm and organic, wonderfully organic.
Yes, I mean, with all of these videos and Tiny Desk in general, I just feel like it's very life-affirming. And as an artist, it reminds me why I do what I do. And so it's really cool seeing all of these folks, like whether they're at the very beginning of their careers or they're years into it, they're still so passionate about their craft. And that's just very, very inspiring.
And they end the video by saying Kamali bringing all the tiny, not only the tiny desk, the tiny baby too. So it's definitely a must see. And we have links to all of the Tiny Desk entries on our Insight page. All right, so we have a little extra time and I didn't get to play one of my favorites from last week. So let's do it now. This is Tip Vicious Slow. They're from Oak Park and they played at the Guild Theater. It's just such an awesome performance.
One, two. This creeping deep into my heart and I don't want it all to fall apart. Move slow, life's moving slow. When traffic shouts and blessings to the pavement, only time I'm cordial with my patience. Slow, life's moving slow. Coffee, cigarettes and daydreaming before I'm even waking up. I'm waking up. Set a watch of goals with her in the cold weather. Disappointed on my proudest days. Disillusioned.
And what I love is that in the description, they said, like, hashtag the city of trees has the most slept on music scene in California. Do you agree with that, Tara?
I think so. I mean, I definitely think that there's so much talent here. And, you know, when you think of California and you think of music, you think of the larger cities, LA or the Bay. But Sacramento really has brought up a lot of talent from past, previous and, you know, currently. So, yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, that brings me to you. What's next for you?
We're working on LP3 right now, so I'm very, very excited. I'm also working on just various other projects outside of the band, but for Rituals of Mine, we are currently working on our next album.
Yeah, I would imagine the last 2 years is shaping or creating some inspiration.
Definitely. After the despair, now I'm inspired.
That's great. Have you been doing any live performances?
We actually just played San Francisco last weekend and it was so beautiful. People are really, you know, they really missed music and you can feel that energy. It was a fantastic show.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Tara, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dara Lopez is a musician and lead singer for Rituals of Mine, which hails from Sacramento and was sharing her Northern California Tiny Desk favorites. We have a link to all of those entries on our Insight page at capradio.org. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about all of our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. Thank you to producer Nick Dobis with managing editor Arm Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Chris Feltz. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us, but a special programming note. On Monday, we have a special airing in place of Insight. It's called Climate Costs from the California Newsroom Collaboration, and it's sharing the stories of the people and the communities being asked to bear the costs of climate change in California. That's airing Monday at 9 a.m. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here on Tuesday. I don't want it all to fall apart.
You're straight up not having a good time. My drip flows, I saved, no, got no hoes for show. Though my cash flow is spent on my mixes and promo. For 8 years I've been at this daily for dolo. I guess you can say I've been taking the slow road. Big tippy on the verge of dripping to the kid. All for you, I hope that you are listening. Song glory, you'll get gory for the glory. I'm not worrying of where you are or who or what's ignoring you. Student loan payment's gonna tell you when to send it, cause my engine lies burning, cause I work it up in heaven. Flow so sick, they avoid me like I'm rabbit. I'm a post-smoke pig just as soon as I get happy again. And that's really the catch, cause I got a lot of pictures of my girl, she the best. But as far as my reflection, give me two to the chest. I don't need to take a breather, I need you to invest.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.